Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode number 26 of The Police and the People. On today's show, we're going to cover, or we're actually going to discuss, the current state of law enforcement affairs. As we know that it is in the headlines, it's on the news daily. And right now, law enforcement has two black eyes. And so Josh and I want to clear the air a little bit on what really happens in law enforcement and the direction we think it should go. But before I do that, how you doing, Josh?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Pretty good. Josh is remote today, and it's not due to COVID. It's just more due to our schedules. So you've been a bachelor all week. How's that going?
Yeah, my family has been visiting other family in the mid-Atlantic, so I'm just trying to survive over here. There's been a lot of SpaghettiOs being eaten this week, and a lot of ordering pizza this week. So
nice,
I'm looking forward to my family coming back here in the next day or two.
You could get some real food.
I actually had some ramen the other day. I don't know if you ate a lot of that.
That's
back
your
in college.
College days, man. Yeah, it was back in my
Navy
days.
The only thing
days
that I haven't had that from my college days is a bologna sandwich.
I grew up on bologna sandwiches, so.
I love it, but that that was kind of my diet was SpaghettiOs, bologna sandwiches, and ramen noodles. So,
right, exactly.
I'm kind of revisiting that this week.
Very nice, very nice.
Yep.
All right, so really quick, before we get started, a couple of announcements. One is that we now have an online training platform. We have we have launched it. It was a lot of work and some money we had to dole out, but it is now in effect. If you go to our website, which is gs-pcc.com, up in the top you'll see online Leo training, and that'll take you to our site, which we go through teachable.com. And right now we have 5 classes. So, and we have several more in development, and we're just going to continue to upload classes as we build them to get that a little bit better.
And I've noticed they are starting to get some interest. I don't know if you get those notifications, Tim, but I got one the other day of somebody logging online and taking one of the classes.
Yes, I do.
So we're starting to see some interest in these now over the last week or so since they've all been uploaded.
Yep.
So that's pretty exciting that we're able to offer that alternative platform for our training.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was COVID that kind of, we had always talked about it, but, you know, we kind of put all of our energy into our in-class training, but then COVID happened, and then we said, you know what, we got to make this happen. So we did, and there it is. Again, if you just go to our website, and at the top where it says online Leo training, it'll take you right to the platform. Another thing is we ask that you help support the podcast by going to our Patreon site and to be a patron. If you could just give a certain amount per month, we would greatly appreciate it. That helps with the cost of the podcast, as well as storing a little bit of money for my son, Lucas, who sets all this up and then sews the end product together. He's a musical guy. And he actually makes his own music and beats and stuff that he sells. So I'd like to reward him a little bit for his efforts. So GSPCC, what do? We are a law enforcement training company that stands for Granite State Police Career Counseling. And we operate in New England, but lately it's been New Hampshire only, right, Josh?
Yeah, it's been a little difficult, obviously, with COVID-19. New Hampshire, as if anybody's following the pandemic nationally, knows that, you know, knock on wood, New Hampshire has been doing okay, been able to keep our numbers down, and we haven't been seeing some of the surges that the rest of the country has unfortunately been experiencing. So we have been able to hold trainings in New Hampshire, and we continue to hold trainings, and we are seeing out-of-state police officers come to New Hampshire to attend our trainings.
Yeah,
because it sounds like we're one of the few states that is able to have them. So we've been fortunate in that respect.
Can you tell us any classes that we have coming up for our listeners in case they're interested?
Yeah, we have some great classes coming up in August. August 21st at Hooksett, New Hampshire Police, we have a class called Successful Conflict Control, and that is very current, especially with everything that's happening around the country right now. It's a very important class, and that is taught primarily by Mike Walsh, who is retired from the Cambridge, Massachusetts Police Department. And again, it's a class that helps officers kind of understand when they are getting to that point that they're not going to have their best day. And that's what we want to do, is help officers recognize where their trigger points are and how to better conduct themselves on duty. And then we have another class called Courtroom Testimony, and that's coming up in Hampton, New Hampshire on August 28th. And that's a class more for young officers that maybe don't have a lot of exposure to the court system, so that they can become more proficient in giving effective and accurate testimony.
Yeah, exactly. All right. And we have something coming up in Maine as well, right?
Yeah, the date is not set, is not concrete for our field training officer class, but we anticipate having a field training officer class sometime in October in South Portland, Maine. We're in discussions with the South Portland Police Department, who are going to host that class. But I would expect that that'll be towards the end of October, and we expect to have that kind of firmed up here in the next day or two. So that's another one for everybody to look for. And as we've said many times on this podcast, our field training program is fantastic. Our instructor is right from the San Jose Police Department. He works in the San Jose Field Training Division, and I would put that class up against any field training in the country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Phil is the best. Phenomenal instructor. All right.
Yep.
Very
really,
good.
Really good class.
Yeah. All right. Let's get on with this. Cue the music. All right, everyone. So today we're going to be discussing the state of affairs, the current state of affairs in law enforcement. And Josh and I agree that the first thing that we want to say right off the bat, and so that everybody knows this, and it's certainly of no surprise, is that we absolutely condemn what happened in Minneapolis, all right, with Officer Derek Chauvin. It was, you know, that's just not how we treat people as police. You know, I was always taught, you know, when you know that there are going to be times when it's going to be tough to get the handcuffs on people. And you know, Josh, when they don't want handcuffs on, it's not easy to put them on. But once you do,
It's not like television.
Exactly. But once you get them on, it's done. You won, right? You won. And, you know, they may still be trying to spit or, you know, kicking their feet, but you know, probably 80% of the fight is out of them at that point. So
right. Once you have somebody in control, the next job is to get them in a cruiser or get them in a transport vehicle or get them to a secure facility. It's exactly. Not time to be almost grandstanding.
Yes.
So yeah, that's the concerning part of it.
Yes. Now I understand there's information coming out that they don't really know if what Chauvin was doing actually contributed to his death. I don't know, but when you've got your knee on someone's neck, on their carotid artery, you know, that's going to be problematic for someone. So,
I've been saying over the last now, you know, few months, it's important to let a process, you know, to go through all the necessary steps. So while, you know, as we said, we condemn unnecessary force of any kind.
And I
think all good police officers would be very quick to say that is not what we're all about. I'm a big fan of let the process go through all those necessary steps before we start, you know, casting judgment on anybody. But the problematic thing, and as you and I have talked about you know, just one-on-one conversations is if you're not actively trying to get somebody under control and then into a secure environment, that's problematic. You know, it's not about showing who the toughest guy is out there.
No.
That's not what our job is all about.
It's not.
So that's the thing that keeps kind of coming back to me is, are people doing the best they can? When I say people, I mean officers do the best they can to get people under control quickly and get them under control safely so that, you know, you can remove them from a dangerous situation.
Yeah.
That's the concerning thing.
Let's circle back to that because that comes down to training to a degree.
Right.
And I certainly want to talk about that. So, but the next thing I want to say, and this is coming from me, Tim Jones, and I'm sure you agree as well, Josh, is that while we certainly condemn the misuse of force in policing, but we're also condemning the idea that you have to fight with the police. All right?
Right.
If there's any message that I can get out there, and, you know, I wish it would be broadcast to every person of every color, and I can tell you right now, if you want deaths as a result or serious injury as a result of being taken into police custody, then all you have to do is not resist. Or, you know, if they tell you to put your hands up, you don't put your hands in your pocket, you know, because that just changes everything. It changes everything. Mm-hmm. I was a cop for 20 years, and I can tell you probably 99% of the people I arrested were compliant. And when I said, put your hands behind your back, they did it. And I put the handcuffs on, and guess what? No one got hurt. You know, maybe their wrists were a little bit sore from the handcuffs. But that's about it, all right? But when they fought, when they tried to, you know, try to hurt me or try to get away, it changed everything. That's when the pepper spray comes out, or that's when the tasers come out, or even, you know, tactics where you take someone down, like an arm bar, things like that, and you certainly have the risk of getting injured, and so does the officer.
Yep.
So I'm telling you, we would see – it wouldn't even be a conversation if people would just – comply with the police. This wouldn't even be a thing.
Yep.
But I'm not confident that's what's going to happen. So, all right.
No, I agree with you. It is, you hate to almost say it's like a partnership because we realize that arresting people is an adversarial process.
Right.
But I agree with you. In my career, I was able to talk people into handcuffs more often than not.
Yep.
And, you know, I used to always say to people, you've done everything right so far. Let's not now have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that, you know, using that, if you want to call it verbal judo, was always effective for me. And because of that, you can, you know, I'm going to call it that partnership that, you know, I'm going to treat you with respect and with dignity. And I ask that you be compliant. And I think more often than not, you know, people just get their day in court, and that's really what it's all about.
Exactly.
At that point.
And you know, if any civilians out there listening, also here's something else that you don't hear on the media as well, or in media, as I just said, that if you do not resist arrest, then guess what? You know, your chances of getting hurt are dropped drastically. But here's another thing. If a police officer pulls you over and says there's a warrant for your arrest and it's a charge of like whatever, okay, and they tell you to get out of the car, you're going to be placed under arrest. There is a warrant for your arrest. It has been confirmed, all right? So now you have a charge against you from that warrant. But then you decide, you know what? Screw this cop. I'm going to fight with him. He's not going to take me easily, okay? So guess what? Now you went from one charge to now another charge of resisting arrest.
Yeah.
And if you punch...
Yep. Or multiple charges.
Exactly. Yeah, and if you
just opened up Pandora's box.
You did.
You're absolutely right.
And if you punch that officer, now you've got an assault charge. So you just made things so much worse for yourself, not only at the risk of being injured, but also now you're probably not going to get bail because of that. And then you're going to have all these other charges against you, and you just made your life so much worse. So,
yep. And to kind of add on to that, I can remember many times that very situation. You come into contact with somebody for a traffic violation or, you know, all kinds of reasons, and then it's learned that there is an open warrant for that person.
Right.
I would always try to remind those people, many times it wasn't a warrant that I had anything to do with.
Exactly.
It was not my investigation.
No.
I was not the officer who completed the warrant.
It could be from another jurisdiction.
And I would tell them that. I would say, right now, I don't care if you are guilty or innocent of this. I don't care if you win or lose this case later on in court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have no investment in this other than it's my responsibility to take you into custody.
Right.
Don't now add more charges on, like we just said, because now you're going to end up, now you're fighting uphill, where if it's just that single warrant, you may be able to address that very easily in court, especially if it's for something like you didn't show up for a court date.
Mm-hmm. Right? Right.
And it's something as easy as you now have to go to court, pay a fine, and go on with your life. I would remind people that right now, this might be something very manageable. Don't make it unmanageable by adding all of these other charges on by fighting with me. And again, I think that was good verbal judo that I was able to use in those situations.
Right, right. All right. So, I hope anyone out there who's listening and you know, if any people in the media hear this, that you would also echo this sentiment that we can certainly make things a lot better across the country if you just comply with police commands. If you think the charge is crap, then guess what? You'll have your day in court. You have a constitutional right to a day in court, and you can challenge it there. All right.
Yep.
So let's move on. So I keep hearing everyone say that we need changes in the police department, right?
Sure.
Yeah, we hear it all the time. But no one is very specific. No one says exactly, okay, we need to change X. We need to change this. All I hear is police brutality and what's the other one? The militarization of police departments. Okay. So really quick on police brutality. I was just reading these numbers the other day, and they were derived from the UCR, the Uniform Crime Reports. And there are hundreds of thousands of arrests in the United States every year. Now, there's thousands that happen every day, right, across the country.
Sure.
Of all these arrests, 1.8%, let's just call it 2%, result in a use of force. Now think about that. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of arrests, and yet 2% require some sort of use of force. Now, of the use of force,
if you're an officer, if you're an officer that arrests 100 people in a year, for the sake of argument, two of them you had to use force on.
Right.
Yep. And it could be minimal force.
Minimal.
Right? It doesn't have to be that somebody went to the hospital or that, you know, God forbid it was deadly force.
Exactly.
But, you know, it could just be, an arm bar quickly to get somebody into custody or multiple officers needing to assist you.
Yep.
I think it's a misconception that police use force quite often.
It is. It is a misconception. Yep. I can tell you in my 20 years, pretty rare. Pretty rare that it happened.
Yeah.
And none of it was to the point where I felt that my life was in jeopardy. I never experienced that. To keep going on that, so of that 2%, I think it was 0.004% of the 2% resulted in deadly force. So it's pretty low. All right, so let's put that into perspective. When you want to say there's police brutality, okay, you need to be a little bit more specific. Now, could there be a problem within a certain department? Maybe. And that's how we need to look at it, not these broad-based swaths of reform on everyone. Maybe just certain departments need to look at their specific numbers and say, okay, I think we may have a problem here. All right. So, but I do want to say that I have some input on some police reform. And I just finished writing an article yesterday for our newsletter on this very thing, which is, I think that sometimes police lose sight that police work is a service. It's not a force. It's not a, it's not like a job where you just try to spend 8 hours hiding and not do anything, right? It's not a job where you try to turn every criminal complaint you take into some sort of, it's a civil issue and get out of it, right?
Sure.
It's a service to the people. That's what you took that oath to do, is to uphold the Constitution and to serve the community. And I think people lose sight of that. What do you think about that, Josh?
No, I think you are 1,000,000% correct. I may have mentioned this to you in the past. I always kind of think of this one incident in my career where we were breaking up kind of a disturbance in the downtown area at one of the departments that I worked at. And there was no criminal, just some people arguing late at night after, alcohol was definitely a factor.
Gotcha.
And somebody came from an apartment building there and just kind of asked what was going on. And this area was, it was kind of a rough and tumble area, a lot of fighting. There were stabbings from time to time, even some shootings. And another officer that was with me immediately kind of got up in this person's face and said, "What do you want?" And they said, "Well, I'm just wondering what's going on." And he said, "Yeah, you're being nosy. Go back upstairs." And I remember kind of saying to him afterwards, that person just asked a question.
Yeah.
Okay. They weren't doing anything wrong. I understand that, we've got other things going on and we're trying to, they were kind of getting in our way of being able to do our job, but they weren't bothering anybody. Don't make it a problem, All you have to do is just say, just a disturbance, sir, please go back upstairs, or please go back to your apartment. We've got it. I get that, but I think that way too often, police officers feel like I have to be in charge of everything, and they take that attitude, and it comes off almost bullyish sometimes to people.
Yep.
And we don't do a very good job of putting ourselves in the shoes. We say all the time, "You don't understand the profession." We need to understand the position of a citizen as well.
Absolutely, that's a good way to put it. Practice some empathy, right? Well, you put yourself in their shoes. Yeah. I always called that because I would see similar situations with people I worked with. And I always called that SPS. It's a secret police shit,
Yeah.
Can't tell them what's going on. Just go away. Just go away.
That somehow they create that divide. You've heard me say it all the time. Why do we have this closed society almost in law enforcement, and we treat everybody that's not a cop, I don't want to say like they're beneath us, but just you're not us, right?
Yep.
Instead of understanding that we are a part of the community, okay? These people are our neighbors. And we need to understand that they are invested just as much as we are in a lawful and safe community.
Yeah, and that kind of rolls into another point that I have here, which is, police work is not an us versus them kind of job, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I see it happen. I remember our one particular guy, he would say this all the time, "God, I hate people." And I was like, "Why are you in this job?" you need to be, you need to find a way to work at home so you don't interact with other people. So don't develop that mindset. Now, here's where I think part of the genesis of that is cops, we don't deal with people when they're at their best. When you pull someone over, they're not happy to see you. When you go to a report of a crime, if they're the victim, they may be happy that you're there, but they're still not happy because they're the victim of something, a theft or assault or something along those lines, right? So it's not that often that you actually deal with someone in a good way, which is why it's so important to get out of your car and just carry on a conversation with people on the streets, just so you can see people outside of that context. But you understand that police can become very callous. Now, just imagine if you're working in Chicago and you're working in a district where, people just hate you, right? Imagine, mm-hmm. you know, the lip that you're, imagine being a cop in Portland right now. Oh my gosh.
It's right. Where, you know, especially if you're assigned to an area where nobody's ever really having a good day, where, you know, just
yeah.
people are struggling, where, yep. you know, people are just trying to get through a day or a week and survive rather than communities where residents are thriving. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
Yeah,
absolutely right.
So it's so important for the police officers that are listening to get out there and get out of your car and talk to people other than when, you know, you're taking a call. It helps you. It's good for you. You can see people yes. in a different light, and it's very important.
Well, if you remember, that. We had Rogers Johnson from the NAACP on
yep.
Our show mm-hmm. months ago now, actually a year ago, and he was talking about it's so important for police officers and people of color to know each other before they have official, you know, contact or professional contact. He said, because that way, when a police officer pulls over a young black male, they immediately, maybe not immediately, but quickly will remember, oh, that's, you know, so-and-so, you know, yep. that's Bob Smith, who I met, you know, 2 months ago in a, you know, a more casual setting. And the young black male who is driving will know that police officer, you know, because maybe they spent some time talking about things other than police work or other than the law. And that familiarization is so important.
Yep.
And we talk about that in our conflict control class, how familiarization is a key to breaking down these walls.
Yeah.
So that, again,
that's
it's
huge.
Not us versus them all the time.
Yep.
Because now there's a personal connection. So that goes back to what you just said. Have contact with people of, you know, it doesn't have to be people of color per se.
People in your community.
In your community as much as possible in a non-enforcement setting. Because then if you do come into contact with them in that, you know, you have enforcement contacts with them, you'll already know a little bit of who they are and they'll know who you are. And that creates a much less stressful situation, I think.
I agree 100%. But one of the things I certainly want to emphasize is that if you, with these us versus them mentalities, certain mindsets can form, and even cultures within a police department can form. And mm-hmm. it's this whole us versus them. And so then you may start to see these brutish type people who look at everybody as a criminal. Everyone out there is just an a-hole criminal that needs to go to jail. And that's how they treat yep. everyone. And that's very toxic for a police department. It,
yep.
It creates certainly a bad image. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, well, I was going to say it. And the problem with that is it's incredibly contagious, I've found.
Yes.
What ends up happening is, you know, we talk about the inner group or the in group and mm-hmm. the middle group and the outer group when we talk about employees.
Right.
And it's very, very similar is that those guys that are bullies or those people that are bullies, they're trying to pull people into their circle of bullies.
Yep.
And if you have young officers that are impressionable, they can become the mentor, unfortunately, for those young officers. And now you have that culture that results in officers almost looking at it like a badge of honor
mm-hmm.
when they charge somebody with resisting arrest. You know, they're almost
yeah.
looking for people to fight with them. And so I think that's where that, you know, subconsciously, or you can even say the unconscious bias comes in. They are subconsciously trying to get people to fight with them because they look at it like a badge of honor.
Oh, my gosh. I've worked with officers like that. That, you know, you would have things pretty calm, and then they would arrive as your backup. And next thing you know, the fight's on. You know, because
right.
they run
and
their
that
mouths.
Was that officer that I was using the example, you know, when they told somebody to go back up to their apartment.
Yep.
I remember another officer saying, everybody fights with him. Has he ever thought about why? Has he ever yep. thought about why every arrest he makes,
mm-hmm.
he has to fight with people?
Yep.
And it was just because he just didn't have the demeanor for the job.
Exactly.
You know?
He didn't
and
have
I
the,
was happy when
yeah.
I did not work with him anymore.
You know, right? I think, so I've worked with two different guys that came from corrections. And I can tell you that I could see in both of them, they were just really good communicators out there. because when you think about it, in the corrections environment, you don't have a gun. You don't have a lot of backup. You're outnumbered greatly, so you need to know how to talk to people. And so I think I like the idea of the way a lot of the county sheriffs do it in the South, that when you first get hired on, you start in the jails, and then you eventually work your way out to working on the street. And I think that's a great idea to help, if anything, to help them develop communication skills.
Yeah. There's two things that I think go into corrections that are really valuable. You've heard me say this when we are teaching corrections officers. I always say when police officers have somebody that they can't deal with, you know, that maybe is out of control, mm-hmm. we take them to the county jail and we leave them with the corrections officers.
Yep,
and
there you go.
What do the corrections officers do? And they all kind of laugh and they say, yeah, we're the people that can't say no, right?
Yeah, right.
We have to take them in and we have to find a way to calm them down, find a way to manage them, find a way to help them manage themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it requires a lot of outside of the box thinking
to be
an effective corrections officer. The other thing that happens is when you're a police officer and you deal with somebody who is a criminal, you deal with them for a very, very short period of time. Corrections officers are dealing with them or interacting with them all the time on a daily basis.
Yeah.
They get to know them. They get, which is what comes back to that familiarization.
Right.
They probably stop seeing them so much as a criminal and almost more like a customer and can now start to learn about who they are and their family and so on and so forth.
Right.
In one of my departments, we would have what they call trustees. So they were inmates mm-hmm. from the county jail that were able to leave the jail for the day and, you know, they might paint the interior of the police department and that sort of thing.
Right.
They were being supervised by a corrections officer. And a lot of times I got to know these people because they were painting my office or, you know, doing some sort of work in the building. And you actually would talk a little bit with them. And now you start to learn that many of these folks, again, just were having, they were struggling somehow. They may not be bad people.
Right.
They just made bad decisions.
Exactly.
And I think that helps as a police officer because now you're not seeing everybody as a, you know, as a scumbag, quote unquote. You're seeing them as human beings that had difficulties. And I think that's so important for us to mentor officers and instill that in officers early in their careers. It's not us versus them.
Right, right. I keep, as you were talking about this, I was thinking about the movie Colors. Remember that?
Yes.
And Robert Duvall's character.
Great movie.
Yeah, he got to know them. He got to know these gang members.
Right.
And they liked him. They trusted him. They would talk to him.
Yep.
And then the young rookie there, Sean Penn, was just, he wanted to just put them all in jail. You know, he was just really hard charger. Which there's nothing wrong with hard charging.
That's probably a movie that young officers should watch early in their careers to see what is, you know, a good policing model versus a bully policing model.
Right.
You know, the maturity of the characters as they become older, more veteran police officers.
Right, because we saw at the end when Sean Penn was then an FTO, and he was a little more laid back, you know, because of what he learned from Robert Duvall. All right, so moving on here, defunding police departments. What do you think, Josh?
I'm not laughing. I'm laughing because it is such a, I don't want to use the word ridiculous. I don't want to demean anybody that is, discussing this, but it's the word is just so problematic, I think.
Yep, I agree. So let's unpack it just a little bit. We've got a few more minutes here. So, and again, they're painting with a broad brush. So if there's a department in a city or a town or wherever, and the governing body is just having nothing but problems with them, and they can back up these problems, I see nothing wrong with saying, okay, clean slate. You're all fired, and we're just going to bring new people in. We're going to just kind of redo the police department, as long as they're doing it within, you know, within their union contracts, and they're not violating any labor laws or anything like that. And that happened in, was it Trenton, New Jersey? A few years ago, I believe
Camden.
It was. Where?
Camden, New Jersey. They, yeah. And keep in mind, that's, people look at that, and we could do a whole show on it, so I'm not going to get into the all the little details about how Camden changed.
Right.
But everybody likes to say, oh, they wiped out the entire police department. That's not 100% true.
Right.
They certainly changed the model, and there was much more information sharing going on and much more, I'll say, call it regionalization going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you and I are saying the same thing, is that if you have a toxic culture or just bad policing going on, it doesn't mean that you get rid of the police department.
No.
You know, if my roof is chronically leaking, it doesn't mean that I say, well, I don't want a house anymore. It means I'm going to fix the house.
Right. Yep.
And so I think that's the problem, is this idea of, if something isn't working the way it's supposed to work, we're just going to get rid of it rather than fix it.
Yep, exactly. And a lot of that, actually, it may just come down to consultants coming in and taking a hard look at the leadership.
Right.
As we know, that a lot of these problems in these police departments come from typically either police administrations that micromanage, and they don't allow their lower level people, it's not decentralized, and they don't let them make decisions, so things get clogged up and slow. Or it's the other end of the spectrum, where the administration, they just don't care and they do nothing. And then things are just
right.
getting out of hand, and they're not able to rein things in when it gets too far. So you need to find that police leadership style that's like the Tommy Lasorda rule, right? That's not too tight, not too loose. It's just right. So this kind of leads to a little. Josh and I have a little bit of a difference in opinion on this, but I put it in the show notes here, and I do not believe that police administrators should wear white shirts, and I'll tell you why. I say that because I think that you come from the patrol, you come from that blue uniform, and you work your way up. And I think the white shirt really creates this barrier, this almost this, you know, us versus them, and not meaning to, right? Kind of attitude. Well, they're just the white shirts. Like, they wear a completely different uniform. And I think it's important that you wear the same uniform. The chief wears the same uniform as the new patrolman, because it shows the unity. Now, there may be some more bells and whistles on the uniform, more collar brass, but it's still the same basic uniform. It shows unity, and you all come from the same place. So, but Josh, you have a little bit of a different opinion on that.
Yeah, I agree in part with some of what you're saying. I think it's very, very dangerous to have a divide between your administration and your working cops. There's going to be some divide just because of the nature of your roles. But I do agree with you that to basically say, you know, we're the white shirts and we're up on the fifth floor, and you're the blue shirts and you're down on the bottom floor, that's not what we should be striving for.
No.
Where I'm going to disagree with you is, we talk a lot about the importance of professionalism in mm-hmm. law enforcement, and I think, again, that goes back to some of the problems that we're seeing right now, is that you still have some police departments that don't embrace a modern professional policing model. They
yep.
still have a very, I'll call it a thump and dump model. You
mm-hmm.
know, they just want to go out there and beat everybody up and be bullies. I think that your administration wearing white shirts in certain settings speaks to professionalism. So when I say certain settings, I mean when they're speaking to your police commission or your city council, when they're attending a police academy graduation, when they're attending, you know, a chiefs of police meeting. I can understand your upper management wearing a white shirt, because I think it speaks to, we are a professional, educated, informed, thoughtful police agency. And when I see Chiefs wearing blue, you know, wearing the same uniforms as all of the other officers, I feel like they must be in a working mode, so to speak. So okay. On a day-to-day basis, I would agree with you, but I think that completely just abandoning ever wearing a white shirt is, I don't think it speaks to a professional agency. So that's why I, you know, not going to say I completely disagree with you, but in certain circumstances, I have a different, you know, school of thought.
All right. Interesting on that. All right. So again, just for the,
I can agree and disagree, right?
Exactly. So for the, in the interest of time, last question here, and I'll kick it over to you is, how do we get back to the broken windows model in policing without, you know, angering the public out there?
Yeah, I think, again, it starts with mentoring. It starts with the moment somebody is hired, helping them to understand that the broken windows model has, in my opinion, some value, right? Because you're being very proactive and you're getting on top of crime before it becomes too serious.
Yeah, let me explain.
But understanding that, I'm sorry, say that again.
I was going to say, before you continue, let me explain the broken windows model for anyone listening who maybe they've never heard of it before. So, it's a model of policing, and where it comes from is from the idea that, let's say you have a building in a city that's not inhabited by a business or people, right? And then some kid comes along one day, throws a rock through a window, boom, breaks the window, all right? Then whoever owns the building or the community does nothing about it. So guess what? Now that kind of tells the public, oh, so the other windows are fair game, right? So then another one, and then another one. Next thing you know, all the windows are broken out. And then the graffiti starts, right? And what it's saying is, like, we don't care. And meaning the community and also whoever. Yeah, and whoever owns that building. So the broken windows model in policing is that when they break the window, you repair the window, right? You don't give that idea that we don't care. And the way that translates into policing in particular, this was something that was done by Giuliani in New York City, was that if you take care of the small things, then the bigger things either take care of themselves or they just don't happen. So that's why they were really coming down hard on people who were jumping turnstiles or the squeegee guys that were out there cleaning windows and people didn't like and harassing drivers. And they did see a reduction in crime. And they did see Times Square become just this, you know, wild place in a good way of different cultures and also tourism. All right. And at one time in New York City's history, Times Square was a place you didn't want to be. And so they really cleaned it up. And part of that was the broken windows model. So getting back to the question, how do we get back to that kind of policing in this country without everyone, by everyone I mean the public, the people that they serve, you know, coming after them and being angry that they're maybe too hard? Or can we even get back to that model? And maybe it's too far gone.
I think we have to really stress that when we're practicing that type of policing, it has to be focused on quality of life issues.
Yes.
And so what that means is we're not out trying to harass somebody just because that they maybe are doing something that we as police officers don't necessarily care for. We're focusing on things that are bothering the public,
yep.
that are stopping the public from being able to you know, be productive in their communities.
Exactly.
So
you hit it. That's right.
We have to be able to to differentiate between harassment and truly enforcing quality of life criminal issues. And that's the other thing is we can't let it bleed into things that are not criminal per se.
Yeah, absolutely. You hit it right on the head, man. And we got to deal with the quality of life issues so that everyone gets behind you. They go, wait a minute, this is working. You know, crime has been reduced.
A safer community for everybody.
Yeah.
For everybody in our community. Not
exactly.
Just one, you know, not just socioeconomically. We're not focusing on just the rich people. We're not focusing on one race or one gender. We are trying to, we truly want to have a community where the police department represents everyone in the community so everyone can be safe.
Exactly.
I think that's the key.
Yep, well put. All right, we're going to close it out, folks. Make sure that you subscribe to this podcast. We are on the following platforms: iTunes, or actually, it's called Apple Podcast now. We're also on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and Alexa. Follow us on Twitter. We're at GSPCC1. Follow and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/GSPCC1. We're also on Instagram, instagram.com/GSPCC. And we also put out a monthly newsletter. You can go to our website, gs-pcc.com. And it is the only pop-up that comes up, I promise you, everyone. And that is just asking if you'd like to be on our newsletter. And I send that out monthly. So, all right, Josh, great talk, man. This is very good. It's good to get back in the saddle on this. It has been a while.
Yes, yeah. Hopefully we can start to get some more episodes out there as things continue to open up here in New England a little bit.
Yep, I agree, man. All right, everyone, thank you for tuning in. And everyone, please be safe out there. Take care.